for every single person who got in this fight, every single person who tried on a new idea, every single person who just moved a little in their notion of what a president of the United States should look like. I will not be running for president in 2020, but I guarantee I will stay in the fight.
That was Elizabeth Warren ending her presidential bid. After a poor showing on Super Tuesday, she became the latest contender to drop out. The Democratic primary is now virtually a two-person race between former Vice President Joe Biden and Senator Bernie Sanders.
One of the hardest parts of this is all those pinky promises and all those little girls who are going to have to wait 4 more years. That's going to be hard.
Elizabeth Warren was once considered the front runner. Her exit has reignited questions about the role gender and sexism play in electoral politics.
Gender in this race, you know, that is the trap question for every woman. If you say, yeah, there was sexism in this race, everyone says, whiner. And if you say, no, there was no sexism, about a bazillion women think, what planet do you live on?
The Democratic primary kicked off with a record number of women candidates. For many of them, the White House finally seemed within reach, especially after Hillary Clinton's historic nomination in 2016 and the wave of women elected to Congress in 2018. But with Warren out now, that dream that so many people had of Madam President will have to wait another 4 more years. Let's talk about this. Megan Garber is a staff writer at The Atlantic. Jennifer Medina is a national political reporter for The New York Times. And Heather McGee is a distinguished senior fellow at the progressive think tank Demos Action. She also endorsed and volunteered for Senator Elizabeth Warren. Thank you all for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
So Heather, we start with you. The presidential primary had so many qualified women. Hopes were high that this might be the moment for a woman to take the top job at the White House. But here we are, left with two men in their 70s who appear to have strong support from women. What's happening here?
You know, I think there are a lot of things at play, but fundamentally, every race is always being run in the shadow of the previous race. And I say that because, you know, the moment that Donald Trump declared victory in 2016 was a crisis inflection moment for women in America. And it brought us a wave of heightened reality and heightened understanding of how much misogyny still exists in our society, from Donald Trump bragging about sexual assault to the way Brett Kavanaugh was confirmed to the Me Too movement to abortion bans. This has been a time when I think more and more American women are realizing how much misogyny still exists in our society. And therefore, as a lot of research has shown, even though the majority of Democratic electors were not too sexist to vote for a woman, they were very aware that the rest of the country might be. And so all of the electability conversation was tinged with this gender consideration from 2016 and from these last 3 years of living under a Trump regime.
Megan, you heard Heather say that this was a crisis inflection moment for women. It's difficult to know to what degree gender factors in any election, but how much do you think it was at play here, Megan?
I mean, very much, but I think it is such a good and important point of how difficult it is truly to know and truly to quantify. You know, we're used to associating political elections with data, you know, and with polling and with numbers in general. And I think when it comes to sexism, you simply cannot fully know at the end of the day, you know, whether the results of Warren's campaign were because of sexism or because of Medicare for All, because of the DNA test. I mean, people will give a lot of concrete policy reasons why that happened, but you simply cannot say that part of it was not sexism. That's just, like she said, you would be living in a different universe if you argued that.
So, Jenny, Megan says, we don't really know if sexism was the total reason, but likely it was a contributing factor. From your experience, at what point last summer, and you were watching the race, was Elizabeth Warren's campaign beginning to flounder? She was once billed as the person to watch.
I think in some ways you sort of always had this undercurrent of could a woman win? And I don't know if we've used the term electability yet. That electability question began to rear its head pretty early on, and it became this sort of self-fulfilling prophecy where people would say, voters, particularly in Iowa and New Hampshire, who really sort of thought of themselves as these pundits, would say, well, I might vote for a woman, but this imaginary neighbor I know out there in some swing state wouldn't vote for a woman, so therefore I can't caucus for a woman. And you saw that piece happen pretty early on.
Who is this imaginary neighbor? Who does this person look like?
I think this imaginary neighbor is somebody in a swing state. It's somebody who is, I think the imaginary neighbor tends to be white, tends to be centrist, and tends to be in the suburbs. You know, the very people that the Democrats are so focused on trying to win this year. That's who these voters were sort of obsessed with in their own minds.
So that's what they were obsessed with in their own minds, this whole notion of electability. Sometimes it seems to be synonymous with white men. Do you believe that we can get past that?
I think that is the big unanswerable question right now. I think people certainly want to believe that we can get past that. And you've seen women and people of color and women of color win in other races. I mean, the midterm showed that women win and women are winning in this environment. Whether or not how that transfers to a presidential election, I think we still don't know and we're still seeing. And what you see now is this sort of hope for a woman vice president nominee. So what happens there may provide lessons for moving forward.
So Megan, why are people still so dismissive of the role that sexism may play in politics?
I think, you know, if there's one feature of American life that remains pretty constant, it's people's desire to believe that we are better than we actually are and that, you know, history has progressed more than it actually has. And I think you're seeing a lot of that with Warren, where you just, you know, if you admit that Warren's campaign was done in a little bit by gender, then you have to sort of step back and say, well, why? And what were the factors that really contributed to that? And you have to do in a way that would actually be very fitting to her message, a very sort of structural analysis of what went wrong. And I think a lot of people don't want to do that. They want to just sort of think, no, we're beyond that now.
How do we reconcile Hillary Clinton's success in the 2016 Democratic primary with what eventually happened?
It's very difficult to do that because, you know, candidates are so individual and elections are such blunt instruments. So I don't want to actually overread and take too many lessons, you know, in the comparison between the two candidates simply because they were so different.
Heather, so many people, especially women, saw themselves in Elizabeth Warren. Now that her campaign has ended, what does that mean for them? How do they move forward?
You know, Democratic politics has been superpowered by women's volunteering and activism and running for office, you know, since the first post-2016 races in 2017 and certainly in the midterm of 2018. I think that's going to continue. And yet, whoever the male nominee is going to have to give some concessions to women, to the women's movement. There's a letter coming out today from feminist organizations with demands on what the nominee has to do, because it does matter. You look at Warren's campaign, and from the personal, right, her being able to tell stories of being a single mom who needed her aunt to move in order for her to pursue her career, to the politics. People don't think about the fact that she eschewed those big donor clutches with a gender lens, but I've been in those big donor clutches and they're mostly all male or, you know, wives, but the donor class is predominantly male. So her standing in selfie lines and doing pinky promises changed who she was talking to day in, day out. So it does matter. Gender does matter and representation matters. And I think individual Democratic women and moderate women and women's organizations are going to be saying that loud and clear between now and November.
You speak about these pinky swears, and they were such a big symbol of her particular campaign. Jenny, throughout Warren's campaign, she used those pinky swears to dozens of girls. She reminded us of that pinky swear when she suspended her campaign. How do we talk about what happened in this election with those girls? I mean, I'm a girl dad. I have a young daughter. What am I supposed to say to her?
So I want to know what you are saying to her. I don't know that I have advice about what we are supposed to say, but I think you see so many parents, there are so many parents who brought their children and especially their daughters to these campaign events. And I'm the parent of some young children, and I see little girls walking around with girl power t-shirts. And I think that's the question is, do we have conversations with 10-year-olds, with 15-year-olds, with 5-year-olds about what this means? I think from what I have heard, a lot of people are still really grappling with that. There are some kids who are really torn up about this. You hear about kids who cried the day that Hillary Clinton lost, the day that Donald Trump won. I don't know to what extent that factors in now, but I think people are still really struggling with how to have those conversations.
So, Megan, you know, we talk about the E word, the so-called electability. How do we disconnect from the obsession with this notion of electability and what some people suggest it means you're not white man enough to be elected?
Right. That's the thing. I mean, I'm not sure how we disconnect from it if the media keeps talking about it. My personal preference would be that we in the media would sort of stop talking about electability, because I do think, you know, it works to sort of lend plausible deniability to bigotry. It allows you to say, well, I'm not sexist, but my neighbor is, and therefore I am not going to vote for the woman too. And of course, the end result is the woman doesn't get elected. So like we said before, it really does function as a self-fulfilling prophecy, but I think it also functions as a way to outsource the bigotry and to you know, sort of cleanse yourself of the guilt of not having voted for the woman by blaming other people. And I think just all in all, it's sort of a bad concept. So I hope that actually we in the media going forward will stop using it so much.
Jenny, what happens to Senator Elizabeth Warren now? What do we have a sense that she's doing next with her life and her career?
Well, there's a lot of speculation about her role in a Democratic administration, but I think she made it very clear the day that she announced that she is not going away and that she is going to speak out and continue to speak to the press. It's interesting to note that she was one of the very few candidates who dropped out. On the very day that she dropped out, she came and faced questions from reporters and did several sit-down interviews. So I think we'll be hearing from her very often.
And Heather, what do you think will be the legacy of Warren's candidacy? Do you expect that the remaining candidates will adopt the detailed policies and plans that have been such a strong part of her campaign?
I sure hope so. I think that her vision and her willingness to put down the details, and particularly in the case of Medicare for All, explain the path, has set a new gold standard in Democratic politics. She's still a lion in the Senate. They call her the dragon of the Senate. And I think she will be an essential part of policymaking in the Democratic Party for a generation.
So, Megan, what do you think this means for the prospect of a Madam President?
You know, I think a lot of women are feeling angry right now, as they have had a lot of good reason to feel angry in the past, both recent and further away. And I think often what we see in American history is that anger galvanizes. Anger itself can make change. And I think that we might see something like that going forward.
And Heather, what about you?
I think that we are going to see women leading the progressive turnout and suburban and rural turnout operations in volunteer organizations across the country. And we are going to see more women running down ballot races, even hopefully surpassing 2018's record numbers.
And Jenny, final thoughts?
I think one thing that I would like to take away from this is sort of what role the media has. And I thought Megan brought up a really good point where we sort of perpetuate this question on electability. So that's something I will take moving forward.
Megan Garber is a staff writer at The Atlantic. Jennifer Medina is a national political reporter for The New York Times. And Heather McGee is a distinguished senior fellow at the progressive think tank Demos Action. Thank you all for joining us.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Carol from Seattle, Washington. Elizabeth Warren is my choice for president, but I think that America would elect any male before they would a female.
My name is JD, calling from Athens, Ohio. I thought Warren was the best, and I feel like she didn't land well because she's a woman. That breaks my heart.
This is Laura from St. Louis, Missouri. I think Americans are still hung up on a 50s era mindset when it comes to women. Until we get over the sexist, macho attitude about who should be president, we will never have a woman in the White House.
This is Kristen from Brooklyn, New York. I'm really upset about Warren dropping out of the race. I thought she would have been the best to bring both parts of the Democratic Party together. She had lots of progressive ideas backing up Bernie, but in a way that felt like she could make it a reality. And it's just sad to see her go.
Hey, this is Molly calling from Columbus, Ohio. I really like Senator Warren and was looking forward to voting for her. I think because she's a woman who is also progressive, she was counted out a significant amount, unfortunately.
My name is Sina. I live in Richardson, Texas. I am absolutely furious that Elizabeth has not gotten the coverage she deserves. That's just unacceptable. The coverage and the way it's been handled is absolutely out of hand.